Well, I gather things are even crazier than usual at the state capitol right now.
I think crazy would be an apt way to describe it.
Well, I'm being nice.
I think, you know, the legislature and legislatures in general procrastinate, and you're sort of seeing a hyper procrastination at this point, where all these bills that they want to have on their records come this November, they're trying to get through and pass at least out of one chamber. And the other side, you know, the minority parties in each chamber are trying to get the majority parties to take some votes that they don't want to take, just in kind of in preparation for November as well. So that's sort of the scene right now at the Capitol.
Well, we've heard a lot of, well, I'll call it debate. I don't know if it's debate or not, but about autism, virtual schools, and voter fraud. Any discussion of the looming state budget crisis and what we might do about that?
Yeah, it is looming, because you're not hearing lawmakers talk about it at this point. The governor really has the first move when it comes to dealing with the budget. Because tax revenues are coming in slower than expected, the state faces about a $650 million shortfall. The governor has to come out with a plan on how to deal with that, and he has to get the, you know, the Republican-controlled Assembly and the Democratic-controlled Senate to go along with that. If he can get leaders to go along with it early, that is Assembly Speaker Mike Hipsch and Democratic Majority Leader Russ Decker, if he can get them to sit down and say, okay, this is something we can all support, and you might actually see a deal go through fairly swiftly. If not, you could see sort of a mini repeat of what we dealt with the budget last year, which was four months late.
Jeez. I don't even go there. Well, handicap this. I mean, what do you think of the chances? If Las Vegas was going to put a number down on this, you know, how would we, you know, how likely is it that the Senate and the Assembly are going to get into the same sandbox and play nice?
Oh, I think Las Vegas would probably look at this legislature's past behavior this session,
and make any decision
based on the best available knowledge, and see that they haven't worked together on a whole lot of big stuff like this. And the closer you get to campaign season, the less likely it gets that they're just going to be nice.
Meanwhile, everybody still collects a paycheck. I understand that the state assembly is about to set a record for the fewest meetings since the state legislature became a full-time affair. Is that true?
They compared to last session, they've maybe met, I want to say, about half as many times compared to, you know, the 70s when they'd meet more than 100 times. The assembly's going to meet fewer than 30 times this session. And so you've had, it's mostly assembly Democrats who are calling it a do-nothing assembly or do-nothing legislature. And, you know, I don't know how much stock you can put into that. They feel like it's a do-nothing legislature because the majority of Republicans aren't taking up Democrat bills there. So you have to kind of take what they say with a grain of salt there. I think what you can say with more confidence is that this legislature, with the split party control, I think you could fairly say it's sort of a dysfunctional legislature at this point, and just the way that things are moving along.
But this isn't the first time that the Senate has been under the control of one party and the Assembly in the control of another. This just feels different somehow.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you've had a contentious legislature before with people like, you know, Senate Democratic Majority Leader at the time, Chuck Kowala, and Republican Assembly Speaker Scott Jensen.
Boy, those were the days, huh?
I mean, there was no...
Never thought we'd look back fondly on that.
they met more often. I mean, the legislative dynamic was a little bit different back then. You know, things are... The Capitol is busy. I mean, the legislature's not... Or the Assembly's not meeting that many times, but the Capitol is busy. It's just... There's a lot of hearings. There's a lot of... You know, a lot of committee work.
And a lot of stuff going on behind closed doors as well.
Well, and a lot of stuff going on behind closed doors. I mean, if you look at the session just this past week on Thursday, the assembly was set to meet at 10 o'clock.
That's a.m.
10 o'clock a.m., correct. I think they got in around a little bit before 9 o'clock p.m. when they first started debating. And, I mean, they didn't take up their scheduled calendar, that is, this scheduled bills that they're going to debate, until about 1 in the morning. They wrapped up a little bit before 5 in the morning. So, I mean, it's certainly not the way that it's designed to run. I think you have to kind of, you know, put this in perspective. Those of us who are stuck in the thick of it. Sometimes it's tough to see the forest for the trees. And, you know, you have to remember that legislatures, at least Wisconsin legislatures, have a tendency to meet late and into the wee hours in the morning. I know they did it last session. They've done it in sessions prior. So that's not new, but it's just when you look at the reasons that they're staying late, these are bills that a lot of them are not going to become law. It's more positioning for the, you know, next year's campaigns where Democrats are trying to force Republicans to vote on stuff that they want to get a vote on the record, autism, for example, and Republicans are trying to get their agenda through, even if it's not going to be even taken up in the Senate. So that's where the, sort of this dysfunction comes in, and you kind of wonder why can't we do this in a little more.
How big is this? How big is this autism issue? I mean, it's certainly got a lot of play in the press, but how big an issue is this?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a family who's got a kid with autism, it's the world. It is the issue. And I think it's, you know, it's an issue that gets the ear of lawmakers because, you know, these families are a pretty strong lobbying force. They come to the Capitol and they bring their kids. And
they have a lot of passion.
Yeah. They say, we need help. I mean, this is expensive. The state has a program or a waiver where families can receive state funding for autism treatment, but there's a waiting list for that. So a lot of these families are just looking for some help from the state, and it's an issue where I think it's hard for a lot of lawmakers to say no, because I mean people know it's something that can happen to anyone. You know, we don't know why there's so many more cases of autism diagnosed now. You don't know, you know, what you can do to prevent it, or if there's anything you can prevent it. I mean, I think everybody knows that they could be one of those families.
And yet this issue has become another example of partisan wrangling. What are the differences between the approaches that the Democrats and Republicans want to take to this?
Well, Democrats are taking the approach that Governor Jim Doyle laid out in his budget last year. And he proposed an insurance mandate where require insurance companies to cover autism. That got taken out of the budget last year. Senate Democrats then proposed again as a bill. They passed that finally last week, but it's not something that Republicans really favor, the idea of this statewide mandate. So on Thursday night, they proposed this idea where they would spend another $6 million in state funding on that state program or that state waiver I was telling you about just a few minutes ago, to end this waiting list of people who are trying to get treatment through the state program. And they say that that's a better approach because even though you're talking about this insurance mandate, it wouldn't cover people who are self-insured.
Who don't have any insurance.
Which is, if you don't have any insurance, you may have options through Medicaid.
Okay.
But for those who are self-insured, which is a lot of people in Wisconsin, this mandate doesn't cover them. So that's what Republicans are saying with their plan. But, I mean, it's hard to know what to think about that plan. It just came out on Thursday night. At least the autism groups who have been lobbying the legislature, Autism Society of Wisconsin, have said that, that's good, but it's a mandate approach, and we'd rather have the insurance mandate.
Okay, and meanwhile, the budget problem looms.
So exactly.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more about that with Sean Johnson, our State Capitol Reporter. This is the State Capitol Report. Coming up after 7:30, we'll be talking about voter fraud with the chair of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, Ryan Priebus. You can join our discussion either this half hour or next half hour by calling us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. In Madison, please use our local number, 263-1890, the email address, talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 17 minutes past 7 o'clock. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. This week, Joy is on vacation. The State Capitol Report is the topic of this hour, as usual on Monday morning. And joining me in the studio, I have Sean Johnson, who is our State Capitol Reporter. And you can join us on the phone at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890 if you're in Madison. We had an email. By the way, our email is talk@wpr.org. And we do have, let's see, hang on a second. Oh, we had an email from someone who who's, I have to scroll back up here, Sean. Excuse me while I try to make technology work for once this morning. Here we go. Jim from River Falls wrote in to ask if we can update on where we are with the Great Lakes Compact. Ah, great question. Thanks for that.
Nobody's voted on that yet. Neither the Senate or the Assembly have voted on that. I think the Senate's going to take it up soon. The Great Lakes Compact is this multi-state compact that regulates water diversion. You're probably more familiar with it up in Superior than we are in Madison.
I did a show on it last week,
sure,
so I'm all boned up on the Great Lakes Compact.
Yeah. But other states have signed on to this, but it's looking like Wisconsin might be potentially the lone holdout.
Ohio, I think, is the other one.
Right, okay. And I guess the issue that Assembly Republicans have with this is the idea that other states could veto a water diversion here in Wisconsin. You know, so if New Berlin needed some water from the Great Lakes to expand and grow in as a community, the Assembly Republicans don't like the idea that it'd be in the power of some other states to stop them from doing that. And so it doesn't look like Assembly Republicans are going to take this up at this point.
Which, Bob, I interviewed Senator Jauch, I think it was 2 weeks ago today, in fact. I'm trying to remember who I was substituting for that day. I think it was mm-hmm. Kathleen Dunn.
Okay.
I can't keep track.
I don't know who you are.
If it's
right?
Monday, some days or care. But the point is, I think the point he made was that getting the compact going actually protects places like New Berlin and Waukesha is another one that's got the same issue, and that the language of the compact is okay. There are other issues involved here. I know that this compact has been around. It was signed in 2005 by the governors,
mm-hmm.
and so all of a sudden now it's become an issue for Wisconsin and Ohio. A number of the other states have signed on or are about to, and there's some concern whether or not that at this point, since everybody has signed off on this, all the governors have, whether it can be reopened without ruining the whole thing. That's a matter of some concern. But just to answer Jim's question, neither the Senate or the Assembly has voted on it. You talked about, Sean, you talked earlier about how often the Assembly has met. How's the Senate been doing as far as actually having meetings and being in session?
I don't know what the count is on meetings for them. They've met more frequently than the Assembly, and they're going to meet more frequently probably over the next couple weeks before the session ends. There's a possibility that this Wednesday could be the last session day for the Assembly, whereas the Senate plans to meet this week and next. I think the entire legislature was hamstrung by this budget process that dragged on until October of last year. They couldn't meet on other stuff while that was going. It pretty much became a negotiation between leaders and rank and file lawmakers. Sort of had to sit on the sidelines and watch. So that slowed everything down.
Any sign that could improve? I mean, did we learn anything from this? Like, you know, this isn't any way to run a railroad? Or is it just, it just seems to me, and Sean, you're there every day, and you see these people interacting up close and personal. The Senate is controlled by the Democrats, the Assembly by the Republicans, and for both sides, there seems to be just a whole lot of my way or the highway. We're not going to compromise. This is what we're right, and you're wrong, and doesn't matter, and if you won't do what we want, then nobody gets to do anything.
It happens a lot. I mean, when you hear both sides talk, they firmly believe in the side that they're taking is right. And you know, if it means on the budget, for example, if it means dragging that fight out for 4 months to make sure that in Republicans' minds, make sure that the taxpayers are protected, so be it. We'll drag it out. Or in Democrats' minds, if it means dragging that process out until we're sure that, Medicaid, schools, the things we value are funded, so be it. We're going to drag this process out. And I won't say that, you know, none of the lawmakers out there want to compromise. For as tough as they fight on the floor, a lot of these lawmakers from get along with other.
Well, you'll see them later at the bar and in on the park.
Aisle.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they get along when they're not fighting out in public. But they don't Right now is not the time for compromise, it seems.
Well, it just seems that people get locked into public positions by party politics, and I have to say sometimes it doesn't look like they're too comfortable with what they think they have to do, and it seems really unfortunate.
That's kind of the case in a lot of these late session votes where you have the parties are forced to sort of stick together. Or, you know, I guess no one's twisting their, well, someone is probably twisting their arm, but it's really seems to be considered bad form for a lawmaker to vote against his or her own party at this point of the year. If you have a procedural vote, they're called, where, let's say, Democrats want to bring a certain bill to the floor on public financing for Supreme Court races, for example. On a procedural vote, even though there might be one or two Republicans or three or however many that agree with that idea, they'll stick with their Republican colleagues and block that from getting to the floor because the parties sort of stick together when it comes to matters like that. So that's an area where maybe you're not seeing people necessarily vote their conscience so much as they are kind of you know, voting for the party.
You mentioned earlier with an election coming up that both sides are trying to position themselves and perhaps get something they can use in campaign literature.
It just seems so apparent right now, and this is both sides. You know, in the assembly, Democrats there are trying to force votes on issues that they think are popular with voters. So, you know, things that aren't on the Republican agenda or on the calendar, they'll try to force it up for a vote just so they can get a roll call of Republicans saying no to something. You know, in the Senate, you're going to see some of the same stuff. You'll be talking about voter fraud in the next half hour.
Yeah, I want to get to that in just a second.
Sure, but as Senate Republicans wanted to bring something up, they wanted to bring up a constitutional amendment that would let people decide whether or not the state needs a photo ID to vote, or whether or not people should have to have a photo ID to vote. And, you know, wanted to force a vote on that in the Senate, and Democrats gaveled shut the session before that that ever got a chance to come up. So, you know, it's a kind of a nasty business at this point.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I mean, you know, you're right there where it's all happening. I mean, this has got to be better than watching TV. You know, it's a drama. You have high drama. There's some comedy involved. You couldn't write this stuff. This is great reality television.
Well, you know, it's your government, though. I don't know if you want your government to behave.
Irony
like
was intended there.
I'm
so
sure,
okay,
I'm sure.
Well, okay. Let's the voter fraud issue popped up this past week. A Milwaukee Journal Sentinel report on an investigation by the police department in Milwaukee into allegations of voter fraud in the 2004 election, I believe it was, and what did they find out, and what, in addition to the constitutional amendment proposed by the Senate Republicans, what's the Assembly want to do about it?
Well, I'm assuming the Assembly would be on the same page with the Senate Republicans. In fact, I should know this, but I can't remember if they may have passed that out of their chamber earlier this year. But yeah, this is an issue where you haven't seen much disagreement among Republicans. They feel like it's a common sense idea that you have an ID or a driver's license to vote to reduce problems. And this is an issue where Democrats have generally been unified as well against this idea. And, you know, their basic tact is that we've had high voter turnout here historically in Wisconsin. And part of the reason is that it's an open process. And, you know, why damage that, they say.
Let's see, what else didn't we touch on yet? I've got a list here someplace. I need to find out. You know, I have, once again, put too many pieces of paper in front of myself. It's an occupational hazard for talk show hosts. We had virtual schools.
Right.
That was it.
Sure.
Where are we on that?
Virtual schools is another one of those that I'm not sure that they're talking at this point. That there's... Virtual schools are sort of in jeopardy, or the public funding that they receive are sort of in jeopardy ever since a court ruling, a court of appeals ruling, said they were in violation of state law. So the legislature has sort of started out taking very different approaches on how to address that. They came together on a compromise a couple weeks ago. That basically got broken up when Governor Doyle stepped in and said, wait, we need to add a little bit something more to this. And he wants a cap on enrollment at virtual schools while the state performs an audit of them to see how they're using public funding.
So we actually had a compromise.
We had a compromise. And this is sort of an example of...
Nobody's, you know, talking to each other.
Nobody's talking.
You would think somebody would have checked with the governor early on.
Yeah. On the other hand, it sounded like the Democratic senator who'd been given the authority to negotiate this, John Lehman of Racine, it sounded like people were giving him some leeway to reach a deal on behalf of Democrats. Shortly before they voted on that deal, the governor stepped in and said, we want a cap. So now I'm not sure that there's real negotiation going on. The assembly did pass a virtual schools bill on Thursday night or Friday morning, I guess, that would have capped enrollment at 8,500 students. And they said, look, that's a compromise. We're giving you what you want. The governor doesn't seem to think so. He thinks that's way beyond what's necessary. And I guess, you know, what he's looking at there is the fact there's 3,500 kids in virtual schools right now in Wisconsin. So 8,500 is about, you know, 2.5 times the number
there
right now. Right. Obviously. So that's not a final deal by any means.
Okay.
And I'm not sure they're talking there.
All right. Wow. Well, it's exciting to be you. Sean Johnson, thanks so much for stopping by this morning. Appreciate
all right, thanks, John.
Your help and all your great coverage. And be careful out there. It's a messy morning here in the state's capital, and we mean that in more ways than one. Coming up after the news, we'll be talking with the chair of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, Ryan Priebus. And so stay tuned for that. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:35. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. In this half of our hour, it's not really a half hour, it's half of our hour. I want to be correct on these things. We're going to focus on one issue for the rest of this hour. Let me give you the phone numbers. The issue we're going to talk about is voter fraud. And you can join our discussion at 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number, 800-642-1234. In Madison, please use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm joined on the telephone in this portion of the broadcast by Ryan Priebus, who is chair of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Good morning, Mr. Priebus. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's an important topic, and I really appreciate and love getting on your show.
Well, I hope you're able to get around here this morning. It's pretty messy, at least in Madison. I don't know what it's like in the rest of the state, but...
Well, I'm in Kenosha, and it's very wet. Very rainy and about 36 degrees.
Oh, see, rain would actually be welcome here. It's kind of a mix of snow and rain, and it was not a fun walk up the street to get here at 5 o'clock this morning. Voter fraud. The genesis of this particular topic on this program is a report that came out in the Milwaukee Journal this past week. Milwaukee police report, the results of an investigation that they had conducted over the past several years into allegations of voter fraud in the 2004 election. And they did find some things wrong, and they made some recommendations, and that's why you're here. Why don't you, from your perspective, looking at this from the Republican point of view, give me what the problem is and what you want to do to fix that problem?
Well, the investigation, and then anyone that wants to actually read the investigative report can do that on our website at wisgop.org, wisgop.org, just for those that want to actually read it. It's about 67 pages, and it outlines, and I'll kind of do the Reader's Digest very quickly, everything that we've been saying for the past few years. And, you know, it's kind of vindication because I know a lot of folks out there just thought these were kind of made-up stories about from the Republicans that didn't want to accept an election or they were whining about losing. But I'm telling you, this report clearly verified the things we've been saying. In short, number one, and I think most importantly, that in Milwaukee County alone, we had thousands and thousands of ballots that were what they call overvoting. In other words, that there were more votes in the ballot box than there were actually registered or voters that had already pre-registered that were crossed off and checked off and voted. So in other words, you get thousands of more ballots than supposedly voters. Okay, number one. Number two, absentee ballot program and system in Wisconsin is a broken system. There were many ballots that were from addresses that don't exist, and this is after a sampling of just 2,000 ballots, ballots from addresses that don't exist, ballots from people who don't live at the address indicated on the envelope. That's all an absentee ballot. That's where the address is put. There were unprocessed ballots, hundreds. No one really knows because the sampling was only 2,000, but even in the 2,000 ballot sampling, there were many ballots that weren't even processed and weren't even counted. There were dead people that had voted. There were felons voting, 220 of them. There were 527 groups that came into Wisconsin, George. I think we all remember the folks that were coming in from other states and registering people to vote. Two problems. Number one, those people weren't residents of Wisconsin. Number two, those people actually illegally voted themselves. They got themselves temporary addresses. They weren't residents of the state of Wisconsin. And they voted in the election, many of them, in Milwaukee County. Now, one of the overall themes in all of this throughout the report is that we have a lot of good people that help us on election day. The poll workers, the election workers. I think most people would say that these are hardworking people. They're basically volunteering their time for our democracy and an important day in our country. But the problem we have in Wisconsin is that, number one, we have same-day registration, which everyone knows about, meaning you can walk into the election polling place on the day of the election and vote. That's the same-day registration. Number two, we don't require any sort of photo identification. Now, that's sort of a perfect storm when you have a presidential election, you have thousands and thousands of new voters, and a lot of these folks, as good-hearted as they are, cannot, and it's not possible for many of them to keep up with the demands that our system is putting them through. We have an antiquated system, and what they're finding in these reports is that most of these mistakes are, many of the mistakes, not most of them that I just outlined, but many other mistakes were made because these election and polling, these election inspectors and poll workers can't keep up with our system. So while people are going in to register and they fill out a registration card, the people at the polling place aren't putting in the data properly into our voting system. For example, you could have someone named Bill, and this is one of the examples they use in the report, and their name would be entered WM, William, Bill, and then you have all these different entries for the same person on the voting rolls. You have, in one particular case, at UWM, they focused in on one of the dorms as an example, Sandberg Hall. You have, right as we sit here today, 2,600 people who are registered to vote from Sandberg Hall who are currently not residents of Sandberg Hall because there's no system for us, there's no procedure that we go through to clean up many of these voting rolls. We have in Sandberg Hall 214 votes that were cast in 2004 that weren't possible to be in Sandberg Hall. There weren't that many people in Sandberg Hall. There were 31 of them that voted for sure that were not residents of Sandberg Hall, but put down an address of Sandberg Hall. Now, these are just, I'm just giving you kind of the Reader's Digest of the problem. There were double voters. There were people from different states using utility bills of people that lived here, and they went in and voted. And, you know, the fact is, without putting someone through a polygraph, a lot of times under our current law, it's very difficult for these poll workers to know who's a resident and who's not because we don't have photo ID. We don't have a system where you need to pre-register. The report itself, George, makes two basic recommendations. There are many of them, but the two main ones are, number one, at the very least, in the state of Wisconsin, we need a photo ID. When you go to vote, you need photo identification, driver's license, something. I think the investigators would prefer that the photo ID double as a photo registration card. And then another thing that the recommendations spell out very clearly is that they believe that in the state of Wisconsin, we should do away with same-day registration. That same-day registration is what is causing a major problem in our state. Certainly the combination of the two is a problem. Now, personally, I think at the very least, the one thing the legislature can do is require at least a driver's license. And I'm not sure if you have to break now or not, but...
We're pretty close.
Those are the two things that I think are very clear out of the report change our system.
And we'll have some time on the other side of the break to do that. We also have some callers who have who want to talk about this issue, and so we want to get to that, too. I appreciate your sensitivity to my need to take a break.
I've done the show a few times.
Well, so you probably know this clock better than I do. I can hear the feet pounding down the hall in the bureaus across the state as they scramble back into the studio to get this break done. Okay, well, I said we're going to take a break, and that's what we're going to do. We're talking about the issue of voter fraud, and my guest is Reince Priebus. He's chair of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. We still have an open or an available phone line for you if you'd like to call us at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. If you're a shy person, you haven't had your powder milk biscuit this morning, you can send us an email, talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 7:47. It's an airplane, and it's our current time. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In my next hour, I'll welcome in the author of a new book about the war in Iraq called After Iraq. That's after 8 o'clock this morning. Voter fraud is the topic under discussion this hour, and helping us to sort through this, at least from the point of view of the Republican Party, we have Reince Priebus, who's chair of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, and he joins us by phone, and you can too, at 800-642-1234, that's a toll-free number, or in Madison, please use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. And I'll mention the email address one more time as well. You can send an email to talk@wpr.org, and we'll try and get your comments or questions in as we have time. Okay. Reince Priebus, as I said, is joining us by phone. And just before the break, you were kind of talking about the two main things that you thought needed to be done. I just want to go back to one thing. I have not read the entire report, and so I'm going from the published news reports, and this from the Milwaukee Journal. It says, one irony, while the state Republican Party touted the report, investigators found almost no evidence supporting the GOP's claims of double voting and invalid addresses in the election.
Yeah, I think that some of the examples that the Republican Party pointed to back in 2004 were refuted by the investigative report, not that that it was an erroneous charge, but that there were mistakes made by the clerks themselves in making someone believe that someone could have double voted. In other words, that the way that things were recorded made it look, in some cases, that people voted twice. In other cases, there were people who had the same names on one roll as another roll. But the report did show, though, there were some individuals who, in fact, did vote twice. There was evidence of double voting, many cases of double voting. But the examples that were pointed out by the Republican Party, I think, were mainly refuted by the report. But, you know, the recommendations that I just gave you, as far as the photo ID, that's certainly a recommendation of the party. But on the same day registration, that was something that the police themselves made the suggestion to do. Now, I know that's a hot topic as far as getting rid of same day registration. And as a party right now, we're just fighting to get a photo ID. We're not even talking about that yet, but that's the police department's recommendation. So, you know, the fact that, you know, I know I'm the chair of the Republican Party. Obviously, I believe this is a no-brainer that we ought to have photo ID. You ought to prove who you are. You ought to prove that you live in the place that you say you live before you vote. That is not an infringement on anyone's 14th Amendment rights. And anybody who thinks that it is doesn't understand the law, because we're only one of two states in the country that allow you to vote on the same day without a photo ID. But this is an 80% issue, George. This is not even a Republican issue. This is a 80% of the people out there agree. A majority of Republicans, a majority of Democrats, and a majority of independents believe that you ought to have identification before you vote. And it's not even a Republican issue. Most Democrats agree with that.
Let's take some calls, because we got some people who've been waiting. We'll go first to Mary in Milwaukee. Mary, good morning.
Good morning. I've been a poll worker since before and after HAVA took place, and I worked in a small university area this last time, same-day registration is just a nightmare. The students come and they've changed addresses. They will have changed addresses again by next September or November. We ended up... At first, there were six of us at the polling place. Late afternoon, they did send us another one. Four of us wrote, filled out registration forms from mid-morning until about quarter till 8. And we were so exhausted. None of us had an evening meal. And there was an article in the paper a couple of days after the election about poll workers being undertrained and overworked, and it is true. And I don't believe the registration or the ID should be a political issue at all. I do not understand why it is. It would help us so much if we had a picture ID. So many of these student cards, you can't tell if they're expired or not. They have a card with a picture, but you don't know if they're expired. And so many of the students came to vote because they were getting extra credit, and they would ask for one of those I voted today stickers. Oh. And a teacher came about supper time and said, I'm just checking up on my students. And I truly would like to see us not have same-day registration, and I would truly like to see a voter ID, a picture voter ID. And I could go on and on about the difficulties, and the poll workers worked so hard. We didn't even have time to check the felony list, and I'm sure there are people that came through that probably we should not have registered, that we let vote that day, because we were so overwhelmed, and the lines were so long, and we were so exhausted.
Is this... Wow. Let me just ask, though, this is the entire focus of this discussion. It's been on Milwaukee so far. Is this... have we seen this happen elsewhere? I mean, I live in Superior, and I don't recall ever having ever had a problem. I haven't heard about problems in Madison or Green Bay or other places. Is this a statewide issue, or is this just a problem in Milwaukee?
No, you know what, George? It is a statewide issue. What Mary's talking about, now, I think overall it's a statewide issue. I live in Kenosha. I know Racine polls very well. On a presidential election, I think everyone out there knows, maybe not in Superior, George, but in places like Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, Madison, it is a zoo in the polling places. And what Mary is saying, and I appreciate Mary, and we couldn't be anywhere without poll workers like Mary trying to keep up with this, with same day registration without a photo ID. It's very difficult, but it is a problem everywhere. What Mary's hitting on is really a key issue in this whole debate. We talk about, you know, whether felons voted or double voting or some fraud. But the core of the problem is what Mary has identified, which is we've gotten poll workers here in the state of Wisconsin on Election Day that can't possibly keep up with the hundreds and thousands of people that are waiting in line and you've got lines running through an entire firehouse, like you're at Six Flags Great America, going out the door, people waiting. You have inspectors, you have observers, you have both parties, both candidates, representatives hanging over the backs of poll workers because our system is flawed and nobody trusts it. You've got these kind of mini tribunals actually set up in polling places arguing over whether somebody is who they say they are, and you have provisional ballot program now where you can argue over whether someone should vote and then they have to come back the next day. Our system is getting so far out of control now that we've got court, like holding court in these polling places without any rules.
Let's take I want to get a couple more calls in here because we have some people who really want to get in. I want to go to Glenn next in Rhinelander. Glenn, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Glenn.
A couple questions. First of all, who's going to pay for these IDs?
Well, look, and I've heard that question before. If we have a driver's license requirement, first of all, most people have driver's license. Secondly, if they don't have a driver's license, the state will pay for it. So the state will pay for it. It might cost a couple million dollars, but you know what? I think that the veracity of our democracy, the peace to know that elections mean something and that winners are winners and losers are losers in a democracy that lives and breathes off elections, that's a couple million dollars well spent. So nobody's going to be left out.
Okay.
People are going to get that ID.
No, I don't go with that. Nobody's going to be left out. First of all,
no, they're not.
You're going to give people who have lost their driver's license to drunk driving and stuff, you're going to give them a license back?
No, the law can be. Let me answer the question because the law.
And we're almost out of time. So
the law can be worked out so that if someone loses a license, there's a provisional mechanism for someone to cast a ballot. I mean, you don't have to take it to the extreme.
What about rest homes?
Again,
and also,
you can
What about old people and old folks?
Well, hang on. That's what I asked. Hang on.
Well, I'll tell you, because for people who don't have identification, for people who can't get identification, the legal proposals that have been out there at the state level, in the legislature, all have mechanisms to take care of people who are homeless, seniors, and people who can't afford IDs. They all have provisions to make sure that they are covered under the system. No one is going to be left out. Everyone who is a resident will be able to vote, and everyone who is legally where they say they are is going to be able to vote. We can do this. We're smart enough to figure out a system to have fair and clean elections that require people to show some sort of identification or some other mechanism for people to show that they are who they say they are and that they are residents of where they say they live.
The let's see. Oh, boy, I don't think we... No, we don't have time for another call. This is an issue that is certainly not going to be resolved in 25 minutes of discussion on a talk show.
Yeah.
We're in our final minutes, so I don't want to open up any new topics.
Oh, that's okay.
Thank you.
Well, you know what? I appreciate it. I mean, we're smart enough of a people here in Wisconsin where we can figure out a way to do this right, and certainly the current system is broken.
Thank you so much for spending this time with us this morning.
You bet. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Ryan Priebus, chair of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Let's see. Leo Duran produced this program with on-air production by Karen Prager. And if you'd like a copy of this program, you can call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program 33B, as in boy. Or you can just go online and listen to it at WPR.org. After Iraq, the book next. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.